This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. You know, on one of the television sets here, they have CNN 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And they're analyzing the Trump trial, which obviously is important and it's historic. But I'm looking at this screen here, and it only caught my attention because I know a couple of the people that are on this panel. And they have five lawyers analyzing what went on in the Trump trial, and three anchors telling you what went on in the Trump trial. Now, isn't that a little excessive? Eight people for a discussion of one day's worth of court hearings? I certainly think it is. All right. Now, let me share with you a very interesting story that I read via email. Hello. I often wonder what makes a good parent. And it's something I've wondered a lot. I think I've been very lucky to have very good parents. I don't want to single anybody out, but especially in the case of my mom, who I'm particularly close to. And a lot, but, you know, again, I have a great relationship with my dad, too, and my stepmother. And I am a parent of only one child. And I'd like to be a good parent and avoid a lot of the mistakes that parents sometimes make. But how do you know if you're a good parent? So I'm reading this article in USA Today. And basically, it's by a gentleman by the name of Louis Villalobos. Really interesting. He's a Generation X dad. Headline, Am I a Good Parent? What I've learned as a Gen X dad. And basically, it asks the question, are you a better parent than your mom or dad? My son's question sent me into a spiral. And Louis Villalobos basically writes, Generation X has sort of an aura about us that includes the idea that we raised ourselves, that we were the latchkey generation, that it's a cool sounding way to say we were home alone a lot. So I'm not going to read you the whole article. It's worth reading. But he says, my son asked me the other day if I had a good mom. I started to go down a winding road of context, which included phrases like, it was a different time, or it depends, but then stopped and answered his real question. I don't know, I told him, but I can tell you that your mom is better than mine. He seemed fine with that answer. It was probably a flare-up of curiosity from an 11-year-old boy who spends a great deal of time with his mom and who has begun thinking about what makes a good parent. And the article goes, that short, random conversation, though, sent me down a rabbit hole of internalization. What even is a good parent? Am I a good parent? Are you a good parent? And Villalobos writes, those are scary questions to ask ourselves. And then he goes through where he landed on the answers Because, you know, I follow sports, especially baseball. It's really the sport that I follow the closest. But it's very difficult to compare different ball players from different eras. Is it fair to compare Babe Ruth and Mickey Mantle? I don't think so. Is it fair to compare Mickey Mantle and Ken Griffey Jr.? No way. Is it fair to compare, Doc Gooden and Justin Verlander? Maybe, but I don't think so there either. I think the same is kind of true with parenting. We're all a product of our environment and where we come from, right? What parenting experts are in vogue at the time, what parenting books they're telling you to read, what parenting philosophies there are, what the traditions are. You know, not long ago, it was unheard of for the father to be in the delivery room. Now, if the father wasn't in the delivery room, there'd be a major scandal. That's just one example. I mean, obviously, we've talked about spanking and corporal punishment. That's another example of how there are different parental standards in different times. There's different things that are expected of parents in different times. And I'll be honest, I don't know how you would quantify someone as a good parent or not. Look, I think every parent loves their child a great deal. It's certainly true of myself, certainly true of my parents. Beyond that, beyond love and affection, which can be expressed in a variety of different ways, what makes a good parent? And I don't know. And this Louis Villalobos column, which I will share with you at facebook.com/MoranoFan if you want to read it, it caused me to ask a lot of these same questions. You know, when I first learned that that my wife was with child, I asked listeners for advice. And one of the interesting pieces of advice that I think it was Joe from Ronkonkoma gave me was the most important thing in your child's life, as far as you being a parent, is time. Is you have to give as much time as you possibly can to your child. That'll make you a good parent. And I thought that was a good answer. But does that mean then that parents who have jobs where they're working 12, 14, 15 hours a day in some cases, maybe two different jobs just to make ends meet, does that mean that those folks aren't good parents because they're spending their time working to provide food and shelter to their children? I don't think so. So what makes a good parent? It is someone that's independently wealthy and has the ability to spend all day with their child without having to worry about going to work? Is that person a better parent than a working class person who loves their child just as much, which is why they're working so hard? I don't think so. Is a parent that parcels out good advice better than a parent that doesn't know what kind of advice to offer? Maybe. So it's caused me to have a lot more questions than answers. And you know, initially, when I saw the headline and started reading it, I was thinking, well, look, the proof is in the pudding. It's like a campaign manager that's brilliant when they've run a winning campaign, and they're an idiot when they've run a losing campaign. It's like a baseball manager who presides over a World Series winning team. Their same manager could preside over a team that lost 100 games. All of a sudden, they're not so brilliant. And so I was thinking, maybe you know if you're a good parent by seeing how well your child does in life, how good of a citizen they are, how good of a job they end up getting, if they're in shape or not, if they're productive, if they're charitable, if they're kind, if they're nice. But then I thought to myself, I know several people that had either terrible parents or absentee parents that are all of those things. My friend Dominic Carter, who joins us just about every day, he had no father and his mother had some serious mental health issues. He's a great person. So I don't think you could judge the parenting solely by the product that they produce. So I would love to know your answer to the question, what makes a good parent? 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Do you have, or did you have, a good parent? Do you feel as a parent that you did as good of a job as they did, as good of a job as your parents did with you, with your children? 800-848-9222. And a lot of times you can learn from a lot of your parents' mistakes. I find a lot of parents overcompensate for their parent, what they perceive to be their parents' shortcomings. You know, for instance, my mom and her brother, they never went on vacation or traveled at all. So really because their family didn't have any money and they were always working. But when I was growing up, vacation and travel was very important to my mom. So we went all over the world. We went to England, went to France, went to Mexico, went on cruises, went all over the place. And I think that was kind of her way of trying to give me the kind of experiences that she never had as a child. And I think that holds true across the board, right? If you I have a friend whose dad was very abusive towards him, physically and emotionally. And he has never hit his child once because in his view, that's his way of rectifying his father's mistake. So what makes a good parent, number one? And number two, do you feel like you were as good of a parent as your parents were? 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Rodney in Pennsylvania. Hi, Rodney.
Good morning, Frank.
Morning.
As being a parent of six daughters, so I have a lot of, experience. But anyway, the first thing I learned was, they don't come with owner's manuals. Children don't come with owner's manuals. You do the best you can. And you can't compare how you raise your child versus your neighbor because you really don't know what goes behind closed doors. So it's really a tough thing to say who's a good parent and who's a bad parent.
But how do you know if you're a good parent then? Well, you say you do the best you can. I think everybody's doing the best they can.
Well, yeah, but there's no guidelines. It shows up when they turn like 18 or 19 or 20 years old, because throughout their youth, you know, you tell them not to do something, and, you know, the kids look at you like you don't know anything, it was different, you look like you got drool running out of your mouth. But as they get older, they start to realize that, Dad, you might have known a thing or two. And that's my judge.
So just to be clear, your barometer of effective parenting is if when they're in their late teens, they come to realize that you were right?
Yes, and you might have known what you were talking about when you told them what to do or what not to do. Because up until then...
Right, but what if you told them the wrong thing?
Well, you don't know. Right. In my mind, it's good. But you don't know. I mean, how do you know? Like I say, they don't come with owner's manuals.
I know. That's why it's such a challenging question, which is why I'm asking it. Rodney, thank you. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. What do you think makes a good parent? And do you think you were as good or a better or worse parent than your parents were? 800-848-9222. Joe is in New Jersey. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing, Frank? Listen, you know what? A lot of people are worried about being friends with their kids. You can't ask an 11-year-old. Was I a good parent? Because, you know, if you're mean and you're a disciplinarian, it makes you look like you're not a good parent. Being a good parent is teaching your kid life skills, how to grow up, how to be a productive member of society.
Well, and
you know,
again,
hold
in the case,
a lady, act like a human being, get a good job, make your way in life. That's
in the case,
being a good parent.
In the case of this USA Today article, it was not the parent that asked the 11-year-old if he was a good parent. The 11-year-old asked his father if he had good parents, and it caused him to evaluate some of the same questions. But so it sounds like you're saying kind of what I began my analysis at, which is the proof is in the pudding, and the product of that childhood is how you judge whether someone's a good parent. Isn't it possible that someone will develop into a good person and do all the things that you just described, even if they had very poor parents?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, like the last caller said, there's no playbook that if you don't follow these exact steps, your kids are going to turn out good or bad. But I think to do the best thing for your kid is to not to give them everything and always just try to be their best friend. You know, a kid needs to look up to his mom or his dad and say, hey, look, my dad gets up and works hard every day and provides for the family. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he's not around as much as he should be, but when you're older in life and you see the things that your dad did for you or your mom did for you in that case, and sacrificed that's when you realize how good your parents were.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe. 800-848-9222. You know, I've heard that about not being friends with your parent. I have mixed feelings about that. You know, my uncle Carmine and all of his brothers were, including my grandfather, were very close to their father. Do you know what they called their father? Charlie. His name was Carmine Morano, but they all called him Charlie. In fact, there was when he was on the 50th anniversary of him being a newsie, he was the oldest, my great grandfather, the oldest newsie in New York City. They did articles about him in several of the newspapers that he sold at his newsstand. Every one of his sons and his daughter, presumably, called him Charlie. And I thought that that was kind of a nice thing because, and I said, why didn't you call your father? Why didn't you call him Dad? And they said, well, no, that's Charlie. He was one of the boys. And they really did view their father as kind of an equal. And I wouldn't characterize him as a bad parent at all, based on what little I know of him. 800-848-9222. Tony is in Brooklyn. Hello, Tony.
Morning, Frank.
Morning.
So this question is really impossible to answer. It's so difficult. I struggle being a parent. It is such a thankless job at the end of the day. I feel I'm an okay parent. I just know my child knows that I love him. And when he says, I love you, Ma, out of nowhere, it makes you kind of feel that you're doing a decent job. Being a good parent is so hard. It's really an impossible question.
You know, it is an impossible question, which is why I like to pose those impossible questions to the audience. And, you know, it's funny. I feel my son's only two, obviously, but I feel the same way when he says, you know, I love you, Daddy, or I love you, Mommy and Daddy. And then I feel all of a sudden slightly less, you know, rewarded when he'll say to a stranger in the grocery store, I love you, or he'll say, I love you, juice, or, you know, like, I love you, random object. But it is a great feeling for the moment that it lasts. But then when he says that to a stranger in the grocery store that he's never spoken to, all of a sudden it's a little bit less of a wholesome feeling. 800-848-9222. Chris is on Long Island. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Frank. Yeah, you know, I've always said this. I have a teenager and a 21-year-old, two kids, boy and girl. I've always maintained that you have to be friends with your kids. That's the most important thing. I'm knocking on wood as I say this. I haven't had one issue with my kids. Because guess what? Who do you confide in? Who do you trust? Your friends. You only go to personal things with your friends. You don't want to be that. I've never understood that. Don't be friends with your kids. You got to be their parent. Totally disagree. It's better to be friends with them. And luckily, it hasn't backfired on me once. My kids will come to me with everything. I always tell them to, like, for instance, my son, when he drinks and he's out with his friends, I told him, I don't care what time it is. You call me up. I'm going to come and pick you up. You never drink and drive, okay? And he does that. He'll call me up like you would do a friend. So I just couldn't disagree more with people who say, you can't be friends with your kids. But guess what? If you're that mean parent or whatever, and you have a kid that's drinking, they'd be like, oh, I can't call my father. He's going to go nuts if he knows I'm drinking, you know, whatever. That's my number one rule, is be absolute the best friend you can possibly be to your kids. That's my rule.
Well, I like that, Chris. I mean, I think when people say that, they're basically saying that, you know, you shouldn't be friends with your child at the expense of doling out the proper discipline. I guess that's the implication there.
Yeah, but you know what, Frank? Guess what? A good friend and all my good friends will tell me when I'm acting like a jerk. You know what I mean? Like, that's I'll learn from my friends when they're like, Chris, why are you doing that? You know what I mean? Like, that's, to me, that's what a friend doesn't mean spoil the person. Mm-hmm. That's not what it is. I'm like, you should always have a relationship with your kid where they could come to you with anything, okay? And that's the key. Where you're not going to get mad at them like, oh my God, you got pregnant. You know, I'm just saying it's
yeah, I agree with you.
That's my number one rule.
Chris, I agree with you completely. And thanks for the call and appreciate your perspective. And it sounds like your children are awfully lucky. But what I was going to say is I was in the car with my wife when she was listening to a podcast of this radio program one time. And it was in the episode that we talked about these scams where young men were being blackmailed. These sextortion scams where these young men would be conned into talking what they thought was a beautiful woman or, you know, a co-ed that they were going to be engaged in a relationship with. And then they would send a nude or sexual photo and then be blackmailed to send money, or these folks would, you know, would blast this photo all over the place. And one of the people that this happened to was almost going to kill themselves. And my wife's listening to this and she said, you know, that's why we really have to make it clear to Carmine that, you know, you can really tell us anything and not to be embarrassed about telling us something. And she felt, I think, that that a lot of the people that she's known had parents with that they couldn't do that with. They couldn't confide in. And I agree with that. I do think that there's a level of, I don't know, distance between a parent that's a bit too much of a disciplinarian, right? 800-848-9222. You know, I'm watching the CNN five lawyers and four anchors. I didn't know they had a studio this big. And I'm thinking that this is more than just an hour. I think they were doing this for 2 or 3 hours. What could they say? How could you have five people talk about this for 2 or 3 hours? I would gouge my eye out with boredom. My goodness. 800-848-9222. Gnome Layden is here. We're going to chat with him in a bit. But first, let me say hello to Bob in Bayonne. Hello, Bob.
How you doing, Frank? Listen, I drank when I was a kid, so I knew I wasn't going to have any because I didn't want to be a bad parent. I grew up with a father that was an alcoholic. And now I'm all alone by myself. And a girlfriend told me I'd be alone by myself when I hit my 60s and 70s, and she was 100% right. I think we have kids to take care of us when we get older. It's a continuing agent of, like, God, to help each other and love each other. That's the cycle of life.
Well,
and I knew I couldn't do that.
Thank you, Bob. I don't think that necessarily, I'm sorry for your situation, obviously, but I don't think that necessarily tackles the question that I posed. Charlie is in Hell's Kitchen. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Frank. So to answer your question directly, what makes a good parent? There are some rules of the road. There are some things you need to stay away from being a bad parent. As you know, don't beat the kid too much. Don't have sex with a kid. That's clearly, obviously, no.
Yeah, I think we can agree if you're molesting your child, you're probably not a good parent. You know, it's one of those things, Charlie, that it's very easy to recognize a bad parent, right? Neglectful, emotionally hurtful.
Abusive.
Yeah, abusive. Yeah. But, you know, it's a much tougher thing, I think, to say what a good parent is.
Well, the thing that I was thinking of is a story that was recently reported. Both Sid and he had Joe Tacopina, the lawyer, was talking about. It was the case that was recently prosecuted. This almost never happened, but it did happen. That's one case. where the parents were of a school shooter were prosecuted, and they were actually found guilty.
Right, I talked about this extensively, the Crumbleys.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I remember it was so heartbreaking. One of the mother of one of the kids that was killed, and she pointed out, and this is what she said in court, it wasn't overly confrontational like a Jerry Springer show. I hate that. I can't stand that kind of stuff. No, it's not. I don't find that entertaining at all. Many people do, but I don't. But the woman of, and this is a terrible, tragic situation to me, and your heart bleeds for the poor woman, you feel bad for her. But she said simply in two or three sentences, she spoke to the mother who was convicted. She said, obviously you didn't cherish and treasure and value your son. And she said, I treasured and valued and loved my son. And that's heartbreaking. And that right there answers your question in a way that it crystallizes and gets to the focus and the nub of your question. And that one woman who was expressing her anguish and sorrow in that very brief form that she had in a court speaking to the perpetrator, to the mother and father who provided the gun to the kid, did the school shooting, she said that, and it illustrated the difference right then and right there between obviously a bad parent, the actions that the bad parent did, and in her case, she was a good parent. She treasured and loved and valued her son, and obviously the other mother didn't. And that was heartbreaking, but I think that goes, that one simple statement, I think that goes a long way in answering your question.
Charlie, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I mentioned my friend Curtis Sliwa before. If you ever can't get through on the phone, you could always leave me a voicemail on my mobile phone, really, but I use it primarily for text. 8168 Marano. That's 8168 Marano. And I asked for this by mentioning Curtis, but I got a call mentioning both Curtis and me earlier. This is actually while we've been on the air this hour, this person, actually, I think just even a few minutes ago, left the following voicemail. I'm not sure it's related to this, but, I see kind of a transcript of what it, it's what it's about. And there's a mention of Curtis. I hope it doesn't take too many jabs at his parenting.
Hello, Frank. It's Shmuley from Borough Park. Frank, we listen to you every night. You're an inspiration, and Curtis is an inspiration. We have a lot of crime now in Borough Park, Frank. On the train, when you get off the train, you're walking on the streets, you never know who'll come from behind and schlug you. This is terrible. So I would like, Curtis, Frank, please ask Curtis permission. Here in Borough Park, we want to start a branch of crime fighting. I want to borrow like his name. We want to call it the Guardian Jews. We're going to be the Guardian Jews. The Guardian Jews. We want Curtis's permission to use the name. And we even have a theme song. We use Curtis's theme song. It's, hold on, I'm not tired yet. I've been running for Hashem for a long time. I'm not tired yet. Hold on. We're not tired yet.
I needed that. That was outstanding. Thank you, Shmuley. Appreciate that. And I am sure your beret in yarmulke form is already in the mail. All right. We'll check in with Noam Layden straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Chances are, 'cause I wear a silly grin the moment you come into view. Chances are you think that I'm in love with you. Just because my composure sort of slips the moment that your lips meet mine. Chances are you think my heart's your valentine. In the magic of moonlight, when I sigh, hold me close, dear.
Mr. Mathis, singing Chances Are, 37 minutes after the hour. It's time for us to welcome back a gentleman that was busy celebrating Pesach yesterday.
Stand by for the other side of midnight's news.
From New York City, the other side of midnight and its affiliated stations present national and international news with Frank Morano and news director Noam Layden. Their summary of the world news and personal comments. Get the rest of the story.
Hello, Noam.
Good morning, Frank. It's about time we get a new train here in America.
And yes.
One that actually goes more than like 50 miles an hour, right? Amtrak, at its highest speed, the Acela, which goes between Boston and Washington, D.C., will hit at some point 140 miles per hour, but it still takes you almost as long on Amtrak as it does to drive to Washington, D.C., which is outrageous because here we are in 2024. It's a little faster, but not a whole lot faster. But here comes the bullet train to Los Angeles, from Los Angeles to Las Vegas. And it will take a private company to build this. Amtrak will not be involved. They will build the tracks. They will put the bullet train onto those tracks. And here's the amazing part. They will have it done, they say, in time for the 2028 Olympics, which are going to happen in Los Angeles. This train track will follow essentially the route of I-15, which goes between Las Vegas and Rancho Cucamonga in California. It would link with a commuter rail connection to downtown Los Angeles. But this train will go as high as 190 miles per hour. So there's real value in this. Normally now, because of the traffic and so many people going between Vegas and Los Angeles, it can take you 4 hours. On this train, it'll take you under 2 hours. So a real value to commuters who want to get there faster, don't want to deal with parking once you get to Vegas, which is always a hassle and can be really expensive. And they'll have it done in 4 years. Bring in private enterprise and they get it done. Amtrak.
Well, it's not done yet.
Let's
not ride there, buy our train tickets before they're built.
But I will tell you this. This is the same company that has built a rail line in Florida, southern Florida, and has been very successful. Also, not as high speed because they have some issues there. But the thought is they got it done in about the amount of time that they said they would down in Florida. Right. You have to wait and see. But just the fact that anybody's even interested in building this, I think is great.
Yeah, I think it's great, too. My brother-in-law, I think, lives in Rancho Cucamonga. If not there, he lives nearby. And it took them, when my wife and I were in Las Vegas about 3 years ago, they drove out to surprise her. It took them about 4 hours to drive. This, my understanding is, the train ride would take about 2 hours.
Yeah. So, and it will follow exactly almost the route that I-15 does. It'll be right on the side of the road for most of the way. And but it'll go a lot faster than drivers are going.
Why has America been so far behind countries like China in terms of exploring high-speed rail?
It's gotten bogged down by politics. You have government control, which always gets in the way. And so some will look at this and say, hey, if you do bring in private enterprise, private companies, they tend to get this done faster because they're worried about the all-important dollar and making money.
Or just bring in an authoritarian communist regime that could just tell people what to do and they get it done.
Right. Well, but Japan isn't the case. And they've had bullet trains there for years.
That's true. Yeah.
So, and it's worked.
The problem is they can't call it a bullet train. I think if it's going to Las Vegas, you've got to call it the ACE train.
Right, right. They're actually, it's funny you should say that. They're floating all kinds of
that's
names
gotta
of
be
what,
the
to,
name.
What to name this thing.
The ACE train.
The ACE train's a good idea. You can throw that out there. I've seen some other names which aren't coming to mind right now, but we'll see if this is done in time for the 2028 Olympics. How about if you have a name that is a name that people don't like and makes you tough to do just about everything? That is what the woman whose first name is Swastika has found out. Her name is Swastika Chandra. So Swastika Chandra grew up in Fiji, where swastika has a whole different meaning than it does probably for the rest of the world. It is a good luck name. It essentially means good luck. She says when she was in Fiji, no problem. She could walk around and nobody looked at her odd when she said her name was Swastika. Then she moves to Australia. It's a whole different vibe there. Nobody wants to know or hang out with somebody named Swastika, even after she explains that it has a whole different meaning when it goes to Native American culture, that swastika has this happy connotation. So what she did find out was that all these apps won't let you get on because they have all these restrictions for this kind of essentially hate speech. So she said, I tried to call an Uber. They would not let show up. I tried to do Grubhub. They wouldn't let me order. And finally, what she did, this happened for about 3 or 4 years. Mm. She wasn't able to do this. And then she called up the local Jewish community in Perth in Australia, and she said, let me explain what my name is. Maybe you can then help advocate for me with these apps and other organizations. The Jewish community stepped up, and just in the last week, she's now able, even to keep her name Swastika. The Jewish community said, nothing offensive about this. We understand why she was named this. And now she's on Grubhub, she's on Uber, and all the other platforms like Facebook and Instagram will now let her come on with the name Swastika.
Well, I mean, I'm glad for her that she gets to, you know, get Grubhub. But she didn't want to just change her name?
Well,
Shirley or something?
She says in her culture, it's happiness. And so why should I change my name from happiness? She said, just because the Nazis took it long after
they had
the name.
And I'm an advocate of taking back the swastika. I would love for the swastika to be brought back to be viewed as a peaceful symbol. But I think if my name was, I don't know, something like that, I would probably pick something that was not going to be such a hindrance to ordering Grubhub.
It's kind of like naming your kid Adolf. You know, I mean, you're just asking for it.
Yeah. Well, look, but maybe in certain parts of the world, if you name your child Adolf, it's not considered Hitlerian.
Yeah. Well, you tell me what part of the world that is.
Well, maybe in Fiji. I don't know what's going on there. I didn't know they were naming kids swastika out there.
The water shortage in Bogota, Colombia is incredible. A lot of South America being hit by low water levels at reservoirs all across the country. The supplies at the Chingaza Reservoir is at its lowest record ever that they've been since they've been keeping track in Bogota at 16%. There's no water there. So the mayor of Bogota has one way to solve the problem to share water is he's asking families and couples to shower and bathe together. Now, I know you've talked a lot about this on the air, but couples and families, this is a country. Oh, he's also asking people to forego showers for a couple days at a time. But Colombia is a country where they're really into their appearance.
Right.
They like to do with the things, shower and stuff like that. So he says he knows that's not going to happen, that people will forego a shower for a day. So he's asking people just over the last week, get into the shower together, bathe together. That will help us save water and get us through this crisis.
Well, so, I mean, I feel bad that they're experiencing this, but culturally, if it's a culture that's not going to accept showering once a week, and I have my doubts if they're going to accept the familial showers as well, what are they going to do?
I don't know. I just know that when you do shower with your significant other, one person's always in the cold, right? Doesn't
yeah,
really, you can't both
true.
Fit under that shower. Right?
Yeah,
one
true.
Person's always like, move. Yeah, let me under the shower. Let me under the water. So, and I got one more for you.
Mm-hmm.
9-year-old boy has won the European Championship for the EC Gull Screeching Competition.
Oh, no.
This is a huge competition in Europe. There's a prize involved. It's not a lot of money, but you get that moment of being the person who can do a seagull the best. So this is the 9-year-old who won the contest. He's Cooper. He's from Chesterfield in Derbyshire. He traveled to the Belgian coastal town of Depan to compete. Here is his version of a hungry seagull. You can hear
that's
the applause.
That's outstanding.
Isn't it? And just
that was a seagull.
It does. And he just, to prove this even more so how good he is at this, he said, I can do a hungry seagull, and I can also do a happy seagull. Can you tell the difference?
Wow.
You hear the people?
Yeah.
I mean, the people went crazy, and then they have judges. It's almost like sort of like American Idol or the Olympics. They hold up scores, and he scored the highest points of anybody and won the Seagull Championship. It's the first time ever that a kid has won the EC Seagull Screeching Contest.
That is interesting. In fact, you've inspired me to do something. I don't know if we're going to get to do it tomorrow, but maybe one day next week, where we ask people to call in and impersonate animals. And I think, you know, maybe there could be something with that.
Oh, okay. Maybe we bring judges in here and we score them. Just
yeah,
like
we'll
EC
be the judges.
Contest.
You, me, Tony, Matt okay. Blaze, and if it's one of the rare days Elias is working.
Okay, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Elias takes a lot of days off. Huh?
Please. Oh, okay. I never see him. Never.
No, Elias is a hard worker.
He certainly works hard at labeling his sandwiches, I've noticed over the course of the last couple of months.
Who could blame him?
Exactly. How was your Passover, by the way?
It was very nice. I had one issue that you can relate to, because I saw this at your ping pong tournament, is that when I would ask people how they knew you, a lot of people said, well, I met him when I was at a petting zoo. You know, they had met you once and you had invited them to their ping pong tournament. We are very similar that way. I'll meet somebody at the dog park. They're sitting at my Passover table like a week later. And so we ended up with a lot of people, way more than I had told the people who, told my wife.
So you were hosting.
Yeah, yeah. 30 some odd people. And the other issue was I needed people out at a certain hour because the Knicks were playing. And I was unable to do that. But at some point I turned the TV on and I said, okay, I know Seder's over. If you want to watch the Knicks, come over, sit on the couch. We'll watch the Knicks
what
game.
Percentage of the approximately 30 guests would you say stayed for the Knicks game?
I would say about a third of them probably were still
okay.
there. I wanted them out. I wanted to watch the game alone, but you can't really do that.
Right.
You
right.
invite people over, you got to show them
hospitality.
But what
do you care, though? I mean, is it that you have to entertain them while they're still there?
Yeah. And some of them were Sixers fans. That's who they're playing.
Oh,
so
okay.
that was kind of annoying
because
they're rooting for the Sixers, but it was a great ending, so we got the last laugh.
You know, I have had a lot of friends that have a difficult time knowing when to leave, and I'm thinking of one couple in particular, but I have one friend, he actually, he listens to the program, so I'm going to be careful. There were times when he would refuse to leave that my wife and I would have to pretend that we were leaving the house in order
great.
To get him to leave and then sneak back when he finally left.
I've had guests like that, not this current time, but we also will have a lot of people over, and there's always one, it's usually just one, who just doesn't get the message that, like, oh, you're wrapping up for the night. You know, like, I'm washing the dishes. It's dark. It's 11 o'clock at night. We want you out. You know, you came for dinner at 6:30. You're still here.
But I'm thinking in cases like that, don't you want to go home?
Yeah.
What are you doing here? Go home.
Maybe we are such good entertainers, they just don't want to leave.
Well, it's true in your case. It's definitely not true in mine. I'm not putting any effort in. All right. Noam, thank you as always.
And now you know the rest of the story.
And now you do. We're going to do 15 seconds of fame in a moment. 800-848-9222. You can be heard on any subject for 15 seconds. Congratulations once again to that 9-year-old crowned the gull screeching champ. I think that'll be fun. Ask people to impersonate the animal of their choice. We'll do that on Monday, maybe. We'll work on that. So start practicing now. You have the whole weekend. 800-848-9222, straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Side of Midnight. Thank you to the late, great Andy B for that great song. We do talk a bit about space on this show. And do you know, on this date in 1990, the Hubble Space Telescope was launched. So there's that. We also talk a bit about books on this show. And on this day in the year 1800, we saw the birth of the Library of Congress. How cool is that? You know, that's another great informational resource. I've never actually been to Washington and seen the physical Library of Congress, such as it is, but that's definitely something I'd like to check out one day. Oh, you know who's 90 years old today, celebrating her birthday? Shirley MacLaine, 90 years old. She was in a recent season, I don't think it was the last season, I think it was the second one, of Only Murders in the Building, which is phenomenal. Today is also Barbara Streisand's birthday. She is 82 years old. Still looks great for 82, I must say. Still looks great. All right, 800-848-9222 if you want to be heard for 15 seconds. Tomorrow in this hour, our friend Brian Kilmeade will be here. We also, and I'm not going to promote Judge Napolitano anymore because we tried twice to have him on and it didn't work out. So we'll see where we get tomorrow. But we are going to have you, and you'll have an opportunity to be heard for 15 seconds as part of
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Mike!
Morning, Frank. All these protesters, pro-Hamas, anti-Israeli, they appear young, 20s mostly, college students or professional protesters maybe, currently or graduated. Why aren't they at work putting those $90,000 a year tuitions to good use? And the president and company wants to pay off their student loans. Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me.
Raji.
Mr. Levin, stop bashing President Biden as anti-Jewish. It was Biden who had our brave men and women shoot down most of the Iranian missiles heading towards Israel to cause thousands of deaths and maximum destruction.
Neil.
After sitting through two Seders consecutive nights, I realized how easy Lent would be. I'm thinking of switching teams.
We'll make you an offer. Rob.
Change your mind.
E. Frank.
Let me celebrate my birthday with all my friends, including Jordan Montgomery's first cousin, Kim, this week. But I would just like to end it with this statement. Eric Adams does not respect the citizens of the city of New York.
Happy birthday. Rusty.
Yeah, yesterday you said you have 3,500 books, right? Shit has 3,500 12x10s. How does his wife feel?
Tommy.
Joe Biden's uncle wasn't eaten by cannibals. He's full of crap. His aunt was eaten by cannibals.
Larry.
Frank, I have to correct you. When conservatives say slogans like life begins in the womb, that's not political activism. That's political reaction.
Esther.
For those who don't know the importance and significance of Passover, please read a Haggadah. And happy birthday to Shirley and Barbara, two great actresses. Great show, Frank.
Thank you, Esther. I appreciate that. We will end it there. A lot to get to tomorrow. I believe Fred Rubino is going to be here as well. Fred Rubino is always a laugh riot, so who couldn't use a laugh? Now, in these times that we're dealing with a lot of stress, 800-848-9222. If you want to get a hold of us tomorrow, if you want to get a hold of me via email, you could certainly do so at frank.morano@redappleaudionetworks.com. That is plural, frank.morano@redappleaudionetworks.com. And you could find me on Facebook at facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's where you can see my interview with Ron Kuby, and or at least instructions on how to get it. And a lot to get to tomorrow. We're going to delve into this Trump trial a bit. We're going to talk with Brian Kilmeade a bit about some other issues that I don't think he's commented on other shows. And still a lot more going on with this protest, especially at Columbia, where there's a big deadline. Frank Morano, good day.
This is Greg Kelly for Priority Gold. What does it mean to be America's precious metals dealer? It means that you're in touch with the hearts and minds of those who love this country, value our freedom, and want to protect the future. Priority Gold is that precious metals dealer. They've helped thousands of Americans back their retirement with solid gold and silver. Call Priority Gold at 888-506-6439. Receive free shipping, free storage, a free investment guide, and one of the best purchase experiences in the industry. Call now or go to PriorityGold.com.